From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is going on, beautiful people? Happy Friday, TGIF. Can't believe it's already Friday. Man, time flies when you're having fun. We've been having a lot of it throughout this entire week on Current Sports. We hope to close out the week with a fantastic show, folks, as we'll talk some Tigers and Indians, recap that Ravens and Steelers game, Oscar Pistorius, new developments in that whole case. Also, it's Friday, so that means Reflection Friday, and we'll break down Manny Mayweather versus Marcos Maidana. All of that and so much more, but hey, as custom here on Current Sports, here's the man, the myth, the legend, the man behind the glasses, what I like to call him. Alex Sharg is here with your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners.
Good afternoon and happy Friday. I'm Alex Sharg, and these are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for Friday, September 12th. The Detroit Lions have named Dan Bogan of Sexton High School as its Michigan High School Football Coach of the Week. Bogan is in his 13th year as head coach and directed the Big Reds to playoff appearances in 8 seasons, including appearance in last year's Division IV state semifinal. Bogan's career is 84-45. Today, the Big Reds will try to improve to 3-0 by winning their CAAC Blue opener at Grand Ledge. Coach Bogan will be honored at a Detroit Lions game later in the season. In college basketball news, Lansing Everett's Trevor Manuel is taking his game to the West Coast. The senior power forward, who is ranked among the nation's top basketball prospects in the 2015 class, verbally committed to Oregon on Thursday afternoon. Manuel's decision came after taking his official visit to Eugene, Oregon last weekend and was blown away by his first trip to the school. The 6'5" Manuel was a former Michigan State recruiting target and also had offers from UNLV, USC, Wake Forest, and Florida State. The Detroit Tigers, on the other hand, will try to capitalize on the Kansas City Royals' loss to the Red Sox yesterday, as Detroit is currently just a half game off the lead in the AL Central. The Tigers begin a 3-game weekend series against the Cleveland Indians tonight at 7:08 p.m. David Price takes the mound against Carlos Carrasco. Playing a pivotal divisional game 3 days after the release of star running back Ray Rice, Baltimore got a pair of touchdown passes from Joe Flacco and rolled past the rival Pittsburgh Steelers 26-6 last night. Coming off a season-opening loss to AFC North foe Cincinnati, the Ravens held Pittsburgh to 2 field goals and forced 3 turnovers. Ben Roethlisberger from the Steelers completed 22 of 37 passes for 217 yards. It was the first time since November 26 that Baltimore held Pittsburgh without a touchdown. A South African judge on Friday ruled Oscar Pistorius guilty of culpable homicide and the shooting death of girlfriend Reva Steenkamp and declared him not guilty of murder. Prosecutors said they were disappointed by the ruling, but would decide on whether to appeal only after sentencing. A conviction of culpable homicide or negligent killing brings a maximum prison sentence of 15 years. The judge said there was not enough evidence to support the contention that Pistorius knew his girlfriend was behind a locked toilet door in his home when he shot through the door. The judge also said prosecutors had not proved beyond a reasonable doubt that Pistorius intended to kill Steenkamp. The United States will play for gold medal in the FIBA World Cup after beating Lithuania 96-68 Thursday in a semifinal game in Barcelona, Spain. The Americans will play the winner of today's France and Serbia semifinal that airs 3 p.m. Sunday in Madrid. Andre Drummond of the Pistons played the final 3 minutes against Lithuania for Team USA. He was the last American to get into the game and didn't hit the floor until the U.S. had built a 30-point lead. Drummond had 4 rebounds and no points. He missed all 4 free throws and attempted as well as only 1 shot from the field. He also committed 2 fouls. Audio has officially been obtained by media outlets on the racial comments made by Atlanta Hawks general manager Danny Ferry in regards to veteran forward Luol Deng. The call led to co-owner Michael Gerson to send a letter to controlling partner Bruce Levinson asking him to fire Ferry or make him resign. Levinson hired a law firm to investigate racism in the front office. The discovery of a racially charged email from Levinson led him to announce he will sell the interest in his team. And finally, on the eve of the biggest boxing match of the year, Floyd Mayweather and Marcos Maidana will take center stage at the MGM Grand Arena in Las Vegas for one more face-off weigh-in before the final showdown. The fight takes place tomorrow at MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada, and will be aired on ESPN. And those are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for this Friday, September 12th. Time to send it back to Al to start the show. Lines are now open.
All right. Thanks a lot, Alex Sharg. Again, Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. So much to talk about, so little time. Folks, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Man, I'm excited. Now, Alex, you know, yesterday we talked about this whole Mayweather and Madonna rematch, and, you know, Mayweather had some just idiotic comments concerning the whole Ray Rice ordeal, and talked about where the, you know, during his situation with Shantel Jackson, his now ex-fiance, in which he was involved with a domestic violence case. You know, he just made some idiotic comments, folks, about how, you know, oh, well, you didn't see any pictures, you know, with Chad Ochocinco and so on and so forth. You saw pictures. There were no pictures, blah, blah, blah. Just some real idiotic comments that rubbed me and along with many other people out there the wrong way. And I was kind of debating on whether or not I even wanted to watch the fight. And, you know, I'm kind of buying into the hype now. I think I may be tuning in tomorrow. I'm not paying for it, though. I'm not paying for it. I will be conveniently going over to a friend of mine's house, and he's having a fight party, and I will be watching it there. So Mayweather's not getting my money. I will be tuning in, though, just because I do miss boxing, folks. I definitely miss it. And, you know, Alex talked about the fight. Of course, that's tomorrow night. But the weigh-in, which is sort of like the last time that, you know, these two can sort of promote the fight and, you know, kind of convince those who are on the fence of watching it to tune in and just really buy the fight on pay-per-view. This is sort of the last time to buy into that hype. So the weigh-in will be taking place today at 6 p.m. on ESPN.
Boy, Al, I cannot wait.
Yeah.
We'll probably get this later in the show, but I cannot wait to get into it. But I can suspect, now that Floyd Mayweather made those comments yesterday, if you remember Larry, the HBO announcer,
Larry Merchant,
the Victor Ortiz fight,
yeah,
he asked Floyd some controversial questions. I guarantee you he will be asked tonight at the ring about what he said with those comments. And I imagine a freakout is going to be coming his way.
But you know what? I don't know. Didn't Larry retire, though?
Oh, yeah, he retired. But whoever will be interviewing Floyd,
right,
a freakout will be coming that way.
Well, the thing is, I mean, they've already, you know, because when Floyd made these comments, national media really got on him. You know, guys like you and me definitely got on him, and deservedly so. And they followed up the other day and asked Floyd, hey, I mean, what were those comments about? And Floyd genuinely apologized for the comment. So he did apologize. He sort of, you know, kind of shoved it under the rug. But, you know, just an idiotic comment at just the worst time you can make those comments. So, but we'll be breaking down the fight, folks, you know, during our last segment of the show. We'll be breaking down Mayweather and Maidana. Alex, are you going to watch it, man, and where?
Oh, I'm absolutely going to watch it.
Where at? Where at?
Not sure yet. I mean, we'll see whoever's showing it for free, right?
Well, that's what I'm going to do. Well, I went out to Planet Fitness yesterday and, you know, got my workout on. And a friend of mine's, you know, he works at Planet Fitness down at Meridian Mall. And he was telling me, Al, you know, I'm ordering a fight, you know, come through. So I'm like, hey, well, there you go. Now I don't have to shell out any money to watch it. I actually paid for that first one in May, which was a good fight. I definitely thought I got my money's worth with that one. But, yeah, this time I'm not paying, no, because I looked at my bill the month after that and said, oh, my goodness, money. I see why they call him Money Mayweather, okay? But we're going to be breaking down that fight. If you want to give your thoughts on who do you think is going to win that one, as, of course, Maidana, you know, he has an opportunity that many folks don't get, and that's to get a second chance, a rematch at the world's best pound-for-pound fighter. Do you think he'll pull it off this time? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Well, you know what, Alex, after you know, I got my workout in and I went home and turned on my television to catch the Ravens and Steelers last night, which we'll also be talking about in just a sec. But, you know, there was one moment in sports yesterday that, you know, I turned on SportsCenter at halftime and I saw it and it just made me cringe. I mean, it was a moment that, you know, you hate to see in baseball. If you didn't see it, folks, the Miami Marlins slugger, Giancarlo Stanton, was hit under the left eye by a fastball, started bleeding from the face, and was taken off the field, carted off the field, actually, in an ambulance during Thursday night's game against the host, Milwaukee Brewers. Now, the Marlins said that Stanton, who is the major league leader in runs batted in, how about that, was being treated at a hospital for a facial cut. He was undergoing x-rays and a CT scan. Listen to this.
Oh my gosh. That ball hit Stanton right up in the face area, it looked like. His hands covering his face. He turned into that ball and it caught him right, it looked like, up under the helmet. Mm-hmm. And the Marlins quickly out there.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, you can actually, can we play that one more time, Alex? Because if you listen real close, you can actually hear the ball hit Stanton's face. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my gosh. That ball hit Stanton right up in the face area. It looked like his hand.
It's a moment. It's a moment that you just look at. And we've seen it happen in baseball before. But my gosh, when it does happen, I mean, it made me cringe. I mean, just looking at that whole thing. Now, Stanton, again, that's an 88-mile-per-hour pitch from Mike Fiers that hit Stanton right in the face. The Brewers went on to win the game 4-2. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what's crazy about this game, though, I mean, right after that incident happens, I believe the next batter, you know, Mike Fiers, you know, he hits the very next batter after he hits Stanton in the face. And the benches, you know, the bullpen is emptied on both sides. No brawl ensued, thank goodness. Which was really shocking to me because I may have been throwing some bows after that has happened. You know, you hit my guy, and then the next batter afterwards, you do the same thing. I mean, oh, I just hate seeing that in baseball. I hope Stanton does recover and it's nothing too serious.
Now, I didn't intend for us to get off to a hot button start, but I'd like to talk about this issue with you, Al, because it rings a bell for me, and I hope this person isn't listening, but there's a story where when I was in high school, I had a friend that was at the batter's box, also up at the plate. He's standing in there. He gets a fastball thrown his way, and he gets hit just like Stanton, right in the face, broke his nose, broke a lot of damage with a lot of facial damage.
Right.
And, you know, there's two sides of it where, yeah, I mean, he threw it right at, I mean, the pitcher threw it right at Stanton. But the other side of it, yeah, I mean, 88 miles an hour is fast, but especially with my buddy in high school, he had enough time to react to the pitch to get out of the way. It's almost, people were saying, and this is just in high school, I'm not saying Stanton mm-hmm. should have gotten out of the way.
Right.
But in high school, it's almost like my friend kind of was just waiting for the ball to hit him in the face. So there's that side of it where he had the opportunity to get out of the way. It's not like he had an 80-mile-an-hour fastball going his way.
Right.
But
right.
he had the opportunity to get out of the way. Now, with
he got hit in the face.
He got hit in the face.
I mean, I don't think anybody's intentionally, you know, trying to get hit in the face, though,
right.
unless you're crazy. You know what I mean?
No, well, because there's a side of baseball as someone who played where you're going to stand there just to get hit by the pitch.
Yeah, to get hit, but not in the face, of course. Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's some who are known for turning into pitches and trying to get hit so they get on base.
I mean, if there's a curveball high and it comes down and swings you back in the face, that's a little bit different.
It's tough.
Obviously, with the fastball, not much you can do. But my hot button topic is, it's not like this is the first time it's happened. As a former pitcher, I was also scared to be up on the pitcher's mound day by day because of all the horrific injuries we've seen with pitching. Look at Rick Porcello. He almost, was it Max Scherzer that got hit by the pitch? He got hit on the ankle, almost cost him the season. That was another freak incident for the Tigers.
Yeah, I mean, it's baseball.
But that's what I'm wondering. Where's the fine line? We're talking X's and O's today, outside the X's and O's. Where's the fine line between the type of equipment and maybe there's some kind of improvements that are needed for situations like this? Because you're not getting out of the way of a 90-mile or 88-mile-an-hour fastball.
Yeah,
it's not like it's a curveball that's swinging in.
Right,
you can't dodge that.
Exactly. And
that's a safety issue.
And that's the thing. You know, it's been talked about numerous times throughout baseball's history because we've seen instances like this happen. This isn't the first time this has happened over time. And there's been talks about, you know, providing some type of face mask protection for batters who approach the plate so that if something like that does happen, you know, they have some protection. You know, their grill is protected. And, you know, and now they approach the base, you know, and they have on helmets, metal helmets, which protects, you know, the noggin. But still, the face is still clearly exposed. As far as that goes, I do think it should be implemented where the athlete should have a choice whether or not to use that protection. I don't think it should be forced upon professional baseball players to use it. But I do think the option should be there because at the end of the day, sports is all about safety. You want to make sure and ensure that the sport is as safe as it could be. So to provide that option, hey, if you don't want to use it, hey, you can be that guy who goes out there and goes at risk for having something happen like last night. But, you know, if you don't want to use it, hey, that's fine. But if you do, the option is there for you to protect yourself. At the end of the day, I'm all about sports being the safest it can be. I think it should be implemented, and I think it will soon.
Yeah, I actually agree with you here, Al. And
agree with me? Get out of here.
I agree with you.
This never happens.
Never. And one of our interns who was on the show yesterday, one of our students that worked at the show, he just brought up to me about the point that, look, Chase Hayward wears the protector all the time.
Right.
If you remember when Carlos Guillen was on the Tigers, he had the helmet that came down to the side, he also wore it as more of a protector for the, you know, the more of the side face area, the cheek area. It predicts more of the
cheekbone.
So the
option is already in baseball.
Right.
I remember us talking about it, and I remember when it first happened last year where the MLB was like, okay, we want to provide this option because we do want our game to be safer. Let's be honest here. Stuff like this happens, and it's going to continue to happen.
Right.
This isn't the first time we're going to see a player get hit in the face by a 80 to 90 mile per hour pitch. It's just so alarming because the video is so horrific. And it just makes you just look and say, man, I mean, there's been players who have lost their lives due to these type of things, you know, where a player has taken a pitch, a fastball, to the noggin, you know, ended up with brain damage and passed away. This has happened before in the sport. So at the end of the day, for the MLB to protect itself against any sort of legal backlash, they have provided the option for players to do so, to have some sort of protection when they go out there. So, you know, stuff like this happens, thoughts and prayers out to Stanton, and I hope he's okay.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is as long as it doesn't hit him in the temple or the impact wasn't
that's
as great.
The thing. Yeah, that's the thing. And he was wearing, you know, a helmet, you know, one of the hard-nosed helmets that they wear when they do take the plate now. So, but man, it's to go back to, you know, to your argument about players, and I just think, you know, okay, you have Mike on the mound. He throws this pitch that hits Stanton right in the grill. He's carted off to the ambulance. And then, you know, a batter later, he does the same thing, ideally, and hits the next guy. I mean, I just think, you know, when I see something like that, especially as a player, if I'm a player on that team, I'm sitting there like, okay, this guy must be intentionally trying to hurt my guy. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, there's a fine line. There is no coinky dink to me. That's no coincidence to me. If I see the very next batter, you do the same thing, there's a problem there for me. And I was very surprised, very shocked, and quite pleased that a brawl didn't break out. And I wouldn't have been surprised if one did, though.
Do you really, though? Because
I mean, the very next batter.
If you saw the pitcher after he hit Stanton and the stretcher came out, he was down in the dumps, man. He really regretted what he did. I don't think there was really any intention of hitting the second batter. I mean, when you have a serious injury like that, what kind of person would ever go out after that just happened?
I understand
and
all
that.
I understand that. But the very next batter? Come on, man. Like, I mean, I understand. There's a lot of great
Things
actors.
Happen.
There's a lot of great actors in this world. You know what I mean? And maybe, you know, I'm not saying that he did it on purpose. We don't know. I'm not in this guy's brain. But the perception, if I'm a player and you do that, right after you hit my teammate like that, they send him to the ambulance. Oh, you better believe, man, the gloves are coming off. You know what I mean? I'm just saying, maybe I'm going back to my, you know, Detroit mentality here, but hey, that's the way I feel about it. Hey, you don't do that twice in a row. To me, it does not look like an accident at that point. So, all right, well, let's keep this train moving. Let's stick with baseball, though. Let's talk some Tigers. Interesting stuff because the Tigers right now, they are only a half game now in back of Kansas City in the AL Central, seeing as though Kansas City, they fell to the Boston Red Sox last night. Interesting stuff. You know, it's all about the race. It's all about the race here, folks. We've been talking day in and day out ever since this really became alarming and the Tigers found themselves fighting for their playoff lives. And, you know, right now the Tigers have to take advantage of moments like this where the Royals, you know, clearly, you know, they had the game in their hands. The Royals dropped one to the Bo Sox, and the Tigers are in position right now again to make some headway into this whole playoff thing now. Every game is a must-win. It's all about coming through in those must-win situations and capitalizing on what your competition in the division is doing. The Royals lost. The Tigers better win and better have a great outing against the Cleveland Indians right now.
They better win.
There are no ifs, ands, or buts right now.
The Indians tossed their season away when they traded Asdrubal Cabrera. That was the finding line, because at one point, Al, the Indians were somewhat close in the division.
Right, exactly.
And the moment they traded away Asdrubal, that was the moment where, okay, they're kind of giving up. But for the Tigers, as you say, there's no excuses at this point. You just come off a great series with the Royals. You don't lose the games that you should win. And this is easily a series they should win, if not sweep.
And if the playoffs were to start today, the Tigers wouldn't be making it at all right now. Because
right.
If you look at it on the other side of things, as far as the wild card is concerned, they are a half game right now. They would be in, because right now they're a half game ahead of Seattle for the second wild card spot. So, but still, it's just an overall feeling of desperation for this team right now. If you look at how this series is starting against Cleveland, you got David Price on the mound. Price has been shaky as of lately. To sort of break down some numbers for you, Alex, he's been 2-of-3 with a 4.1 ERA over 7 starts. Now, in the last 3 starts, the numbers are even more alarming. He's had a 7.13 ERA in his last 3 starts. So he has not been great. and they are going against a pitcher who brings it tonight. Carrasco, you know, he's 4-0 over six starts since returning to the rotation in August 10th, posting a 0.7 ERA for baseball's lowest mark during that time, dating back to that time on August 10th. So, I mean, he's been dealing, you know. And, you know, right now, I believe, you know, looking at some guys who love the Indians, Torii Hunter loves the Indians, Alex. He's been 6-for-15 with 4 extra base hits and 2 homers throughout his last outings for Cleveland. But this is a dangerous game because you're going against a pitcher who is in a complete zone right now. You know, you're looking at Kansas City. You want to capitalize off their loss, but this is going to be no walk in the park. And you don't know, ideally, what you can get from David Price just because he has not been consistent in his starts as of late. So, you know, it's kind of a catch-22 game. If you had to ask me what I thought the Tigers were going to do tonight, I have to be honest with you. I have no clue. I wouldn't be surprised if they won this game by 3 or 4 runs, and I wouldn't be surprised if I saw on the contrary where they lost this game by 3 or 4 runs. I just don't know what I'm getting with the Tigers each and every time they take the mound now.
No, I agree, and I feel like we're just a broken record at this point.
We are. We're preaching to the choir now at this point, right?
Yeah, but the good thing I think is they're not going to see too much of great Cleveland pitching. Corey Kluber, who usually destroys the Tigers, I don't think they're even going to see him in this series.
But an opportunity like this. Let's say, I mean, you're going against Carrasco, again, who has been lights out, one of the best pitchers in the game right now, looking at his past few starts. You go against him. Let's say the Tigers drop this game, and let's say the Kansas City wins. I mean, the Tigers are looking at now a game in back of Kansas City. Wild card is now in jeopardy. I mean, every game, every moment, every at-bat is so crucial at this point. And, you know, everything has a spotlight on it now. Everything has a target. Any mistake you make has a target, and it can have a detrimental effect looking down the road for the Tigers now.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Al, I got to ask you more about the rotation. I saw an interesting article about Justin Verlander, and we talked about if he can be a solid pitcher, if Anibal comes back, will he make the team with the playoffs? Now, we didn't really touch on it earlier this week, but the bullpen's been getting a lot better. It seems like starting pitching has been more of the question lately, not in terms of consistency, but who that fourth or fifth spot would be.
The more
you've seen Verlander recently, even with the Cade Upton distraction and him coming back that had a, you know, decent outing, I'd say okay. Has your perception changed at all with Verlander recently?
No.
Have you dropped him down to 5?
No.
Is he still 4?
Nope. Nothing has changed as far as my outlook on Justin Verlander. I mean, Justin Verlander is a guy who has had a roller coaster type of a year. He's had outings where he's looked decent. He's had moments where he's looked like the JV of old. But overall, Justin Verlander's overall production on the mound has not led me to say, okay, JV is back at all. I mean, and how could you? I mean, looking at his outings for the Tigers this entire year, I mean, Justin Verlander has not been great. He has not been great at all. I mean, there have been numerous starting pitchers on this squad that have outplayed him, point blank period. I mean, Max Scherzer has had a better year than him. Looking at David Price, even dating back to when David Price was in Tampa Bay and didn't even have the, you know, when the trade didn't even happen yet before the Tigers. I mean, David Price was playing, you know, one of the best pitchers in the game. Rick Porcello, I think, has had a better year than Justin Verlander. So there's nothing that will elude and give me any type of positive thinking as the season winds down that Justin Verlander is going to get out of the funk and be the Justin Verlander of old. And there's nothing that you can really harp on throughout the year to say that he is going to do so. So to answer that question, no, I'm still not high on JV. You know, he has to prove me wrong. And like I said, this whole Cade Upton thing is not helping them at all. To wrap up this discussion, though, looking at Miguel Cabrera, he's batting .450 with 5 homers and 10 RBIs in 10 games this month. Mickey has been lights out despite him obviously being not 100%. And the Tigers, historically, against the Indians this entire year, they have outscored Cleveland, 32-15. That's an alarming number.
Alarming.
Almost double.
Yeah.
Almost double the runs that the Indians have scored against the Tigers throughout this entire year. And they have won 4 of the last 5 matchups against Cleveland. So if you're a Tigers fan, you know, those are some positive things to really harp on. Looking at this series, the Tigers, though, every moment is desperation mode right now. I'm still sticking to my guns. The Tigers will win the American League Central. I'm just not too high on Kansas
City.
Now,
what were your thoughts?
City.
We didn't touch on it on Tuesday, but what were your thoughts? I think it was Wednesday, but Soria coming back with the Royals series in the third game, Did you catch him pitch a little bit, Al?
I did. He gave up a run in the ninth, actually, and I believe it was...
Accuracy was off.
Yeah, his accuracy was off. You know, he ended up, just looking at the ball. I believe Phil Koch, too, went out of that game, too, I think. Was that the same game? I'm not sure. I'm not even sure. I have to double check. It was in my notes yesterday. But, yeah, I mean, Soria's a guy. And the bullpen, you know, I'm very impressed with us, though, because we have not really bashed the bullpen like we have earlier this season, Alex. I remember, you know, that was kind of the talk of the town. Every time we would bring up the tires, we would have to bring up that bullpen. But the bullpen kind of, in a way, started to form some sort of consistency or stability throughout the later part of last month, to the point where the Tigers had something, you know, to really harp on and be positive about. I thought Phil Koch had a few good outings, you know, and Joe Nathan, you know, he came in and was able to pitch decent, you know, throughout the course of some games. As far as Soria, though, I mean, we saw Soria actually start his campaign with the Tigers, and I haven't been too high on him ever since. Again, he gave up, you know, an early run in the ninth, you know, kind of looked at the Tigers and said, okay, here we go again. You know, the bullpen can't close out the game. The best six-inning team in baseball. As far as Joaquim goes, though, I think the verdict is still out on him. They did a good job of salvaging that game and closing things out. But you can't make those types of mistakes in the playoffs, though, Alex. I mean, when you're up and you have a lead, you have to maintain that lead and have to be confident that you can bring in your closers and they can close out the deal.
Right.
Those type of things in the playoffs get amplified times 12. That can't happen in the playoffs. The Tigers want to make a world championship.
To his defense, it was his first game back, also against his former team.
Yeah,
so
but Alex, I mean, at what point do you stop giving the excuses? You know what I mean? At what point do you start to say, okay, I understand, you know, it may be against his former team and so on and so forth, but a championship team doesn't make excuses.
Right.
At some point, they got to stop, right?
Sure, as a team, but for Soria, it was his first game back. I'm sure he struggled a little bit with coming off an injury, that's tough.
I hear you.
You've been injured before, haven't you?
I hear you, Alex. But at some point, I'm not fond on excuses. You know what I mean? If you got Miggy out there, you know, playing still with a sore ankle, not 100%.
Yeah, but Miguel Cabrera is the king of swats.
I understand he's from Pluto. Miguel Cabrera's from Pluto. But if you got, okay, I'll go another route then. If you got Torii Hunter, who's 38 years old, going out there and still providing efficiency for this team, there's no excuses for this Tigers team right now. All the excuses are out the window at this point. If the Tigers don't win a world championship, it is a failure. Point blank, period. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. So at some point, I just feel as though they got to stop. All right, folks, our phone lines are open still. They will be open throughout this entire hour up until 2 o'clock. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. In just a moment, of course, we'll be talking about the big fight, Marcos Maidana versus Floyd Mayweather, part 2. Yes, the rematch, folks. We'll be taking your calls. Don't touch that dial. All right. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Friday. Funky Friday is what Alex Shark likes to call it. I don't think he knows who this is, but we all know this tune. I don't know who the artist is either, but it's some funk for you on this Friday. You know what, Alex? I was really excited about today's show near the end of the week because today was supposed to be like the homecoming of Matt Luckey, our former production assistant. Of course, Matt he held the show down for so long, and he was a great contributor to us here at Current Sports, and of course got a job out in the beautiful city of San Francisco, California. He's out there working his tail off right now, and he shot us a text saying that he could not be on today's show. He was actually at the Oregon game. He was there and witnessed MSU in Oregon. He was down there at Autzen Stadium. Wanted to get his thoughts on just the atmosphere from a fan's perspective and so on and so forth. But Matt could not be with us because I guess his job is having him test out, which I think is really cool, the new iPhones. The new iPhone 6 is coming out this month, the iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus, and he's testing out the new software, the operating system, what I think is iOS 8, I believe it is. So that's definitely more important than talking to MSU football. Hey, Matt, do your thing, but I was looking forward to having him on. We'll get him on next week. But are you getting a new iPhone, Alex?
I'm not sure, man. I'll have to see about all the reviews and whatnot.
I've been doing some extensive research. I'm sold. I'm getting the 6 Plus. Going to buy the 6 Plus, even though it is very, very expensive.
Well,
I've been saving up.
I read something, and someone called me out on it that said they weren't too sure about it. But I think it's pretty true that Verizon is doing a deal where they give you like the 5C or maybe a few iPhone 6s. If you sign a 2-year contract or something, you get a free iPhone.
I'm sure there's some discounts. I've had my iPhone 4, not even the 4S, not even the 5S or the 5C. I've had the original 4, 8 gigabyte for 3 years now.
Too long.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, you're due for a new
this
phone.
This thing it has been through war. All right. Well, yeah. Well, again, we'll have Matt on next week. Again, folks, I have to remind you all that, hey, Current Sports TV, if you missed it last night, if you missed me go through the one-hour training regimen with Spartan Performance and Drew Coker over there, my legs still are aching to this day as we speak, folks. If you missed that episode, as I sat down with Marcel Carruthers, who is the head football coach over at Lansing Everett High School. It was a great episode. He had his team out there. It was a fun stuff. If you missed it, though, you can go check it out right now and view each and every episode we've done in Current Sports TV history by simply typing in video.wkar.org. Enjoy it, folks. Great episode this week. Okay, well, let's shift gears now and talk a little Thursday night football. Man, oh, man. You know, it was really alarming to me. Well, first of all, I have to talk about CBS's production. This is the first time that Thursday Night Football is now embarked on the airwaves of CBS. It's really cool because they take the guys, a few analysts from NFL Network, combine them with the sports team from CBS, and it really an unbelievable production. I mean, it kind of reminds you of the Super Bowl, you know, now being shown on television each and every Thursday night. I mean, it's a huge production. I kind of saw how they put the whole thing together from behind the scenes. They have a staff of, get this, over 300 people. 300 people travel with this thing each and every Thursday night. Unbelievable production. But, you know, aside from that, though, the Ravens and Steelers kind of kicked off the season. I tell you what, I was not expecting the Ravens to come out like they did. I mean, my goodness, I had the Steelers actually winning this game. And, you know, I just thought with the distraction, of course, with this whole Ray Rice story, I thought with that coupled with the fact that the Ravens, you know, they were kind of an average team last season, and this sort of is a telling year for Mike Tomlin and the Pittsburgh Steelers to sort of shake off an average year for them last year. And it looked so good in game one with a big win. And I just felt as though the Steelers were going to come out with this one. But the Ravens seemed to be kind of fueled and motivated by this whole, you know, Ray Rice story, and sort of banded them together facing a lot of adversity coming in, and it wasn't a distraction at all. You know, if anything, it kind of brought this whole team to another level. You know, the Ravens just really brought it to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Big Ben, Ben Roethlisberger was not great at all. His accuracy was off here and there, and he's got to play better. Ben Roethlisberger has got to play better if the Pittsburgh Steelers want to make, you know, even just want to make the playoffs here. You know, and looking at it, you know, for the Steelers, they have really no run defense. The Ravens were able to do what they wanted. 9 penalties, which kind of hits on just the fact of discipline. You know, the absence of discipline, I should say, for the Steelers last night. And turnovers. If you look at it, the Ravens defense, they delivered turnovers in 2 of 3 times that the Steelers got inside the 20-yard line in the red zone. Can you believe that? I tell you what. And this is an alarming number, too. Alex, Mike Tomlin now is 17-17 looking at his past outings. Can you believe that? Wow. That's alarming stuff, man.
Yeah, that's an alarming stat. Now, to the issue, if I was surprised at all by this the whomping of the Ravens over the Steelers. Now, Ben Roethlisberger is an interesting point, Al. I mean, he's a veteran now. He's been with the team for a long time. They've been kind of waiting on Roethlisberger the last 3 to 4 years. Now, in the first 8 first downs of the game for the Steelers, they got 17 yards. So they kept having all these third and longs. They weren't able to get the ball up the field at all. On first down, they couldn't do anything for the first 8 possessions of the game. Now, did you think that Roethlisberger just had a poor performance, or the defense really showed up for the Ravens?
I think it was coupled with both. I mean, anytime, you know, especially looking at that last drive as the Steelers wanted to make some sort of showing of positivity to close the game out. They had an opportunity where they're storming down the field, and then all of a sudden you have sort of that offensive line crumple. Roethlisberger didn't make a check or move out of the area of the offensive lineman. He tips it, dives, makes a great dive to intercept the ball. I mean, I just thought that Ben made, you know, some inaccurate throws throughout the entire night. The offensive line for the Steelers didn't play great. So I'm not putting this all on Ben Roethlisberger. But, I mean, I give credit where credit is due. I thought a lot of that had to do with that Ravens defense. But I felt as though, looking at a few passes, a lot of passes throughout that game, Ben Roethlisberger should have put the ball on target, and he just simply didn't.
Yeah.
Which was really odd to me.
And it's funny because Roethlisberger and Flacco, they're both kind of similar situations. You know, former Super Bowl champs, you know, they've been in that spotlight before, and now they're getting older in their career. It's like, it's almost asking how much longer do you keep him around? Or, and same with Romo. It's like, how much more do you give him? And do you feel that at all with Roethlisberger, that his time is almost coming to an end now? Is it too early to say that quite yet?
I think it's a little early to say that, but I see where you're going, though. I mean, he's no spring chicken.
I mean, between those
career,
three, Romo, Flacco, and Roethlisberger, yeah. They're both veterans.
Romo's done.
Both haven't won in a while.
You know how I feel about my Cowboys. You know how I feel about Tony Romo. Tony Romo, looking at that terrible performance that he put on last weekend, Tony Romo does not need to be the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys right now. I don't know what Jerry Jones and that coaching personnel sees in Tony, but his instincts as a quarterback in the pocket, he just doesn't have it. I mean, there were moments last year early in his career, especially where you saw Romo, you know, have some shades, you know. I mean, he looked good. You know, he looked like, you know, one of the premier QBs in the league.
And it's not like he was a started first-round pick. I mean, he got the position by default.
Blue-collar.
If you remember.
Yeah, he's a blue-collar guy. I mean, he took advantage of his opportunity, you know, when he got it, and he, you know, ended up being, you know, the starter. I mean, I just feel as though maybe he's gotten complacent in his career now. Maybe he's gotten complacent. I don't know. But looking at the garbage that he threw up this past weekend, I just feel as though Tony Romo is done. But as far as Roethlisberger, hey, I mean, Roethlisberger has won a Super Bowl. You know what I mean? So we know he has the capabilities, right, the mental capabilities to be a premier quarterback in this league again. I still think he is. I to be honest with you, I still think Ben is. It's just like,
even
I don't
with
know,
all the
I feel
injuries.
As though, even with all the injuries, I still think he is and can be that guy. It just seemed more mental to me, if anything, last night, especially when he took that early hit. It just seemed as though his whole mentality just kind of shifted. I don't know, but we will certainly see. All right, well, let's keep this train moving. One of the big hot button topics that is certainly getting a lot of press happens to be centered on Oscar Pistorius. Now, if you guys don't know who Oscar Pistorius is, I mean, he is certainly, you know, before this whole incident took place, looked at as one of the prides of South Africa. You know, he's a South Africa legend when it comes to sprinting and running. He was looked at by many people as a hero, being a double amputee Olympian. I mean, just a really classy guy. I remember looking at the Olympics in the summer, you know, I believe that was 2012. And Oscar, you know, he's just a great feel-good story. But then, of course, things took a complete 180. As, you know, not too long after the Olympics, he was, you know, he had thought, now this is a story, he had thought that his girlfriend was an intruder. Late in the wee hours of course, Valentine's Day, decided to grab his gun and shoot it through a locked bathroom door in which his girlfriend, Reva Steenkamp, was in. It was a really gruesome shooting. She ended up passing away. And, you know, everything hit the fan from that point on. The trial has been going on, and as of recently, a South African judge, this morning, ruled that Oscar Pistorius is guilty of culpable homicide, I should say, in the shooting death of his girlfriend, and declared him not guilty of murder. Now, just to quickly define that for all of you out there, because I do not have a law degree. I'm not like my brother. So I had to actually Google what culpable homicide actually means. And it is actually is defined as this, the illegal killing of a person, either with or without an intention to kill, depending upon how a particular jurisdiction has defined the offense. So it's the illegal killing of someone with or without the intention to do so. Now, this can get him 15 years in prison. A hearing should begin, I'm looking here, on October 13th to solidify things as to what his punishment will be in this whole thing. And it's just really coming to a climax now after a long, 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 long trial. For me, I was really kind of surprised, though, that this ruling was handed out, seeing as though they had declared him innocent earlier this week of murder. Like I said, I'm no law expert here, but I do see how the ruling of culpable homicide, I can see how that was handed down, looking at the specifics as to what that is certainly defined as. Again, the illegal killing of someone with or without intention to do so. So they believe that there was not enough evidence to prove that Pistorius knew, you know, that Steenkamp was behind the locked toilet door. There was not enough evidence to prove whether or not he knew that his girlfriend was behind that door. So they went the other route and said that, okay, but you still killed her, basically. And I'm interested to see when the punishment he gets for this. I don't think there's any way, you know, the trial proved that there's any way to prove that you can dive into Pistorius' mind and actually go through what exactly he was thinking at that moment in time. It's really impossible to prove that at this point now, especially now that this ruling has been handed down. But man, oh man, I mean, you look at Pistorius' perception before this whole ordeal, Alex, looked at as a national hero, double amputee Olympian, a feel-good story. I mean, that was one of the biggest stories of the Summer Olympics in 2012. And now to have this happen, and it kind of begs the question for me, and I always go back on this, I kind of agree with Charles Barkley in this regard. It's really hard to look at an athlete as a hero in today's society. It's really tough, Alex.
Yeah, and it's a little cynical, but I could definitely see that side of it. And if you remember when Lance Armstrong, who was that hero for people overcoming what he did, that totally dropped the sport of cycling as a whole. And now, I mean, Tour de France, they're just showing highlights. It's not even broadcasted anymore in major television networks. Now with Oscar Pistorius, are you going to see a big decline with his sport? Well, there wasn't a huge uproaring to begin with.
Right, right.
But what I do think is that for a country like South Africa, and for him to be South African, not an American, but a representative, an Olympian out of the United States of America in the United States national spotlight, I think that is bad that it's garnered this much national attention. So I feel more for his country rather than more for the fans of the sport. I think that it's not going to really have as big of a decline. I mean, sure, people looked at him as a hero from his country and from the world of in the Olympics and the Olympic world. But it's more the people of his country that I think that are more affected by this than anything.
Yeah, I agree. Outside of course, Oscar Pistorius the family of Stenkamp, of course. Yeah, South Africa is certainly, because they don't. It's not like South Africa churns out, athletes, that are looked at as heroes nationally. You know what I mean? Oscar Pistorius is a guy who, again, it was a feel good story. I mean, he's looked at as a double amputee out there competing with able bodied Olympians. I mean, you rarely see that kind of stuff. Yeah. Kind of reminds me of Ronald Mann, the story I did on Ronald Mann, who was an amputee in the field of UFC right here in Mid Michigan, who competes against able bodied athletes. I mean, that's just unfathomed territory. I mean, it's an unbelievable story. But then to have something like this happen, it just shows you, again, how in the blink of an eye, something can happen that changes your life, changes the life of many who adore the sport of racing, and can change the perception of how a country views you from going as a hero, from being looked at exactly the opposite now. Sad stuff, folks. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. 9527. You can call in about 15 minutes left in today's Friday edition of Current Sports. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and tweet me at Al Martin WKR. Before we hit the second break, Alex, let's bring up US of A right now as they are competing right now. Of course, the FIBA World Championship Games for national basketball. And the USA right now, I mean, they're rolling. They are certainly rolling right now. They reached the gold medal game after beating Lithuania 96-68 yesterday in a semifinal game in Barcelona, Spain. Again, they will play the winner of today's France and Serbia semifinal at 3 p.m. And that championship game will take place on Sunday in Madrid. Now, for those of you Piston fans out there who are wondering how Andre Drummond has been faring throughout this entire run, well, looking at yesterday's game, Andre Drummond played the final 3 minutes against Lithuania for Team USA. He was the last American to get into that game and didn't hit the floor until the U.S. had built a 30-point lead. He had 4 rebounds, no points, missed all 4 free throws that he attempted, as well as his only shot from the field. He also committed 2 fouls. All right. Well, first of all, I guess we can talk about Drummond, the local aspect here. A Detroit Pistons guy, the center who made the USA team. Many people didn't even think he would make the team, including myself. Coach K puts him on the team after a very admirable late push. As the roster cuts were winding down, he makes the team. So you have DeMarcus Cousins, you have Mason Plumlee among Drummond as the big guys on the team. And, I just feel as though, I don't know, maybe it's just me kind of being salty as a Detroit Pistons fan. I just feel as though, Drummond could use some more playing time. They're blowing teams out by 30 points. Why not put him in, earlier? When it's a 15-point lead or a 20-point lead. I don't know. I just feel as though Coach K could have put him in earlier. Again, that's just my salty self speaking, seeing as though I'm a Pistons fan and want to see Andre Drummond out there. So, we have a caller right now. Mike from Saginaw is on line 1. How you doing, Mike?
How you doing there? I wanted to talk about Michigan State off this week, the football team.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Do you pay attention to what football coaches say about progressions and stuff, what they play, what they play calling is?
Yeah, definitely. You know, like, as far as the scheme from week to week for State?
Because it all comes down to blocking and tackling and moving guys out for the running back and go through the hole. But I just want to know why they make it so sophisticated, like, we got a formula or something like that other teams don't have.
Well, Mike, I mean, strategy is a part of the game, right? I mean, when you scout an opponent, that's the reason why you have scouts. That's the reason why you look at why D'Antonio and company looks at so much film from week to week. It's ideally the reason why they scheduled Jacksonville State to start the season, seeing as though they will be seeing a similar type of offense against Oregon. So, I mean, that's all in the scheme of things. I mean, ideally the game is about the X's and O's for guys like D'Antonio, and it's a chess match. So I think that's just a part of the game, Mike.
I understand that. Okay, why don't they – is that because I laugh at what they explain in these press conferences about play calling and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I just think about it, if they just keep it simple, because it always comes down to the basics, you know that.
My former boss at Channel 6 used to have a phrase, you know, just keep it simple and stupid is what he always used to say. But I think it goes beyond that, though, when you're talking about a game like football, though. I mean, sometimes, you know, ideally, if you're playing, you know, an opponent who is not on your level as far as talent-wise, a lot of times talent can supersede scheme in many, many regards. But if you're going against a team like, you know, how Michigan State went up against Oregon, where, I mean, this is, you know, a team who plays and, you know, it was on a national spotlight, they're ranked number 3 in the nation, you want to make sure you cover all bases and that you are prepared for anything that Oregon dishes out, looking at how they've played in the past. So, you know, I feel as though it's a catch-22 in that regard, Mike.
Okay, let me talk about something else if you can. Want to talk about the Atlanta Hawks situation down there with Danny Ferry.
Right.
And about the scouts talking about Luau thing and talking about his attitude. Basically, what it comes down to, a player's attitude, what they evaluate on. And I just want to know, I know that these organizations spend a lot of money scouting players like all major league sports and stuff, but do you think that kind of conversation goes on with all of those sports?
As far as what, Mike?
You know, like,
what kind of conversation?
Referring as African and what kind of, you know, the controversial stuff, you know.
As far as the racial comments go?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, if you look at these comments that were said and the reason why, you know, the GM decided to step down and it's really interesting because when this story broke, I tell you what, if this had been any other week, Mike, this story would be getting so much press. You have no idea. I just think the fact that, you know, Ray Rice and the whole Penn State allegations, especially Ray Rice, though, the fact that that is going on, this story kind of got pushed underneath the desk, if you will. But, you know,
because I think Atlanta, the CNN station, they cover it once or twice, and then they went on to the other, especially about Ray Rice and stuff, and I'm just, you know, I don't know about this is much more serious, I think, than we need to know more about this. That's what I really think.
Right.
Now.
Right.
I really do. And, because,
right.
I mean, you call him about his culture, and then you say stuff like, well, that you got to watch what he says, and he's a nice guy, but then he said he's a little bit shady behind the scenes. And, you know, you basically character assassinating somebody, you know. You're not really. Right. I assume that all scouts and professional sports know about guys like that. Because here's what I want before I let you go to the other college. You remember Marvin Barnes, do you?
Marvin Bad News Barnes?
Yeah.
Of course, for the Detroit Pistons, yep.
Yep.
Who sadly passed away. Yeah.
They say about him not showing up to practice and coming in the games late and how he was performing, and then he wind up acting like he became a street guy and he just ruined his career like that, man.
Exactly. Yeah, and character is big. First of all, thanks a lot, Mike, for your call. And, I think, you know, character is big. Character is huge, especially in today's age. But, you know, it's funny you bring up that Mike brought up Bad News Barnes, Alex, because Bad News Barnes, have you seen the documentary on one of the very first ABA basketball teams?
I have not seen it.
Oh, it is so good, man. It talks about how Bob Costas was actually, that was his very first play-by-play job for that team. And Bob Costas, you know, he's traveling with this team left and right. And, you know, they would talk about how Bad News Barnes would, you know, he would show up late to games. He would be out partying the day before. I mean, it's almost like you cannot do that nowadays because of the Twitter and social media world that we live in. So I think character, if anything, I've always said this. I mean, character in today's sporting world, in today's society, is so important. It is so important because things are amplified to the nth degree now. Every little thing you do that you may perceive to be little is amplified, and it can make national news in the blink of an eye. So I definitely think that's a great point, and you know, it's really interesting to see how this story will pan out now between, you know, between Ferry and the Atlanta Hawks, because if you read the email and if you look at, you know, with Bruce Levinson, who is the controlling partner of the Atlanta Hawks, and what was said, it was really coming from a business standpoint as to how to raise attendance as far as Atlanta Hawks venue is concerned. A lot of moving parts to that. I really want to dive into it, but unfortunately we have about 9 minutes left, and we have another caller who is online too. John, who's actually an MSU professor who actually attended the MSU-Oregon game. How you doing, John?
I'm doing great. Nice to talk to you.
Definitely, definitely. Glad to have you on.
Yeah. So I was out there. My sister lives in Portland, so it was a chance to go out. She has three kids who went to University of Oregon. So I went out there, and we drove down and spent the day in Eugene. And it was just great. Everybody welcomed us. It was a yellow day, and everybody said, glad you're here, you know, nice to have you.
Right.
Fans were fantastic to us.
So a great atmosphere overall. I'm curious, how many Spartans actually made the trip? So when you were in your stands, in your seats, and you took a moment to look around the stadium at Austin Stadium there in Eugene, did MSU travel well for that game, John?
They did. Well, I didn't think there were so many, but the Oregon fans said there's so many of you. They were amazed.
Were they?
I would say in my section, maybe 1 out of 20 were Spartans. But that was enough at the end of the first half for me to be standing on the aisle giving high fives to everybody coming up the aisle. That made the whole trip worthwhile.
That is outstanding stuff. So, John, another point I want to hit on is, you know, when MSU had that lead at halftime, and everybody, and I was on Twitter at the time, and everybody, you know, was stating, okay, this could be a turning point for this program, D'Antonio. This is what the D'Antonio era has been waiting on.
Yeah.
I mean, what was the overall feeling when you kind of saw the air, you know, so quickly, in 5 minutes, get let out of that balloon?
I mean, I couldn't believe it. You know, it was just that fast. I kept thinking, no, that's just one bad one. You know, the missed pass by, you know, to the open fullback. And, you know, then the tip pass that, that's right, the announcer's going, yeah, it's a pass tip. It's intercept. It's incomplete. And
right.
Then, no, intercepted. That was it.
Yeah. Right, right. A roller coaster of emotions, I tell you, John.
Yeah,
all right.
I'm
sorry.
At the end, I'm going to say that the people, we hope you had a great time. The people from the university, they were just great hosts.
That's good to hear. That is great to hear, John. I tell you what. So let's just recap who you went with. Who'd you go with again?
My sister, who lives out there. So she was, and she didn't say much during the game when we were ahead, but as she was rooting for Oregon, and as it got closer and closer to the end, she got louder and louder.
Gotta love that. Hey, well, thanks a lot for your call, John.
Okay, good to talk to you, Al.
Appreciate it. Oh, that's great stuff. Man, oh, man, I wish I could have made that trip, Alex, down there. I talking with Joe Rexbro earlier in the week and hearing these comments from John, it seems like MSU traveled very, very well at that game. That's a great feeling for us who have graduated from MSU. We travel pretty well.
It's great that also at the end of the trip, regardless of the loss, like John said, people really enjoyed the experience and the fans greet them well. It's not hostile like Ohio State and Michigan often are with that rivalry. And
right, right.
Like Michigan and Michigan State. It wasn't a hostile environment at all, and that's nice to hear, too.
Definitely. Friendly stuff. All right, 5 minutes left. We want to close our show, of course, by talking about the big fight. Floyd Mayweather. Well, I guess, you know, he's given, you know, he never does this. Floyd never does this. He never gives boxers a second chance to knock him off his undefeated throne. He is doing that with Marcos Maidana, a guy who really pushed Mayweather to the brink. Well, at least somewhat to the brink. You know, I say that because we've never really seen Mayweather cut. We've never seen him in a mode of desperation at any point in any fight as of recently. But we did in May, as Maidana came out with a flurry of punches. He was able to cut Mayweather. He was able to stifle him a little bit. And Mayweather had to change up his technique and method as that fight went on. Well, these two will go at it again tomorrow night. The weigh-in for that fight happens at 6 p.m. on ESPN today. I'll be taking a look at that. It's sort of the last moment for these two to promote the fight, which I'm sure is already going to make a lot of money. But looking at it, you know, and to give our quick thoughts and predictions on it, I think, Alex, if Maidana comes out with the same energy that he had in fight one, in which through those first four or five rounds, he was able to be so aggressive, sort of, you know, put Mayweather on his heels in many instances. If Maidana can come out with that same amount of energy, but with a little bit more accuracy, which is tough to say going against the best defensive fighter in all of boxing history, but if he comes out with that same aggressiveness and same energy and maintains it throughout an entire 12 rounds, I think we may see Mayweather go down in this fight.
Boy.
Now, Willie, I said in Marcos Maidana, Mayweather won, that Maidana would win, and Maidana's not the type of guy you can give a second chance to. Mayweather's losing tomorrow.
Wow. Wow. How could you go against a guy that's never lost?
Hey,
I don't understand.
I did it the first time. I'm going to do it again.
All right, Al. Well, for Floyd to win, I think, honestly, this time, as much as he's a defensive fighter and it'll go 12, you know, it'll go all rounds and you're not going to see any knockouts, Floyd needs to be a little bit more on the attack tomorrow. And that's because, if you remember Maidana's last fight, the reason why it was so close is because Maidana, when he hit his punches, they were big, powerful punches. And,
oh, he packs power with his punch,
and,
right?
And they almost had Floyd on his heels. Now Floyd, I mean, with his fight, I mean, he fights for accuracy. He fights for the percentage of fights of punches landed. He's not fighting for that big haymaker,
right?
That left-handed haymaker.
And you know, yesterday he said that, hey, I'm looking for a knockout here, which I don't think is going to happen,
right.
But yeah.
And you know, the odds, if you look at the odds makers this year, they're a lot less than last year.
Maidana in May was a 12-1 underdog against Mayweather. That's totally kind of flipped on its heel this time around.
So that makes you think, they must know something. I mean, it's obviously what the people are talking, but the people must know something. There's obviously way more concern this time around.
So who are you going with?
I'm going to go with Mayweather. I don't think you can go against a guy
until they lose.
And
of course.
With the Red Wings. We said last year that you can't bet against the Red Wings until they don't make the playoffs.
Exactly, which is very, very true. And, you know, I predicted, you know, last time that Maidana would win and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I actually threw a fight party at my apartment and all of my fraternity brothers were harping on me
saying.
They were
laughing at you.
They were laughing. I was the goat in the room, man. I tell you what, after every punch that Mayweather would land, I was getting turned to and had to defend myself.
But you did tell him it was closer than most.
Exactly. And they gave me my respect for that pick.
Yep.
So I'm going Maidana again. A part of that has to be for me. I mean, all the greats lose. It's got to come sooner or later, and I think it'll come tomorrow, folks. All right. Really quickly, quick favorite story of the week, Alex?
Has to be the news coming out today with Chris Davis getting suspended for amphetamines. That was breaking news coming out of this morning. Orioles first baseman. Obviously, it shows that the amphetamines are outside of the NFL. I mean, this is a larger sport. A larger sport issue here.
Definitely. And for me, I got to give a shout-out to Dan Bogan, my guest for last week's Current Sports TV. How about him? Detroit Lions coach of the week. How about that? Dan and his team are ranked actually second in Division IV football right now. They will be back in action tonight as high school football week three. Man, oh, man, does time fly. Week three of high school football, folks. Be safe going out to the games and bundle up. Fall is just about here. Thanks so much to all of you for tuning into today's show. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and 90.5 WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. As always, take care, have a fantastic weekend, and be easy, people.